Coming up on Tech News Today, Opera now based on Chrome's engine. Foxconn wants to make software. Microsoft and Google team up. What's going on in the world? We'll tell you next.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Tech News Today for Tuesday, May 28th, 2013. Tech News Today is brought to you by RingCentral. We do everything in the cloud. That's why we love our cloud-based phone system by RingCentral. Zero startup costs, and RingCentral is $20 a month per user. Try it now with a 30-day risk-free trial and buy one desk phone and get a second phone free up to 20 phones. Call 800-543-9980 or visit ringcentral.com and use our promo code TWIT. Welcome to Tech News Today. I'm Tom Merritt.
I'm Sarah Lane.
I'm Ayaz Akhtar.
And I'm Jason Howell.
And this is the show where we keep you up to date on the most important stories in the tech world, starting each time with the top 10 stories of the day in the news feed. Samsung announced an event for 11 a.m. Pacific time Thursday, June 20th in London, England, to talk about its Galaxy and ATIV line of phones. The event, called Samsung Premier 2013, will also live stream on Samsung's YouTube channel. Galaxy is the product line name for Samsung's Android phones, of course. And ATIV is Samsung's Windows phone, tablet, and laptop line. So pretty much all their electronics will be talked about.
The European Union's antitrust chief says Google may need to offer more concessions if it wants to put to rest a three-year investigation into complaints that it purposely edged out rivals in internet search. Google submitted proposals to the European Commission earlier this year with concessions like labeling its own products better in search results, making it easier for advertisers to move to other platforms, etc. European competitors say Google's plan would still force competitors to raise their costs and push merchants into further Google dependency.
Last week, LG introduced a new white variant of the Nexus 4 that will launch in the next several weeks. The specs are the same as the current vision version except for the color, so no LTE in this one. An LG executive also made a comment to Dutch site All About Phones, saying LG has no plans to build a Nexus 5.
CNN BuzzFeed launched on YouTube yesterday. The channel is a partnership between the cable news channel and the news and meme tracking website. BuzzFeed will spend hundreds of thousands of dollars on the channel, according to COO John Steinberg. The channel will launch with three new BuzzFeed videos per week and archived CNN feature content, and the channel will not be ad-supported at launch.
Focus Taiwan reports that Mozilla and Foxconn are going to be debuting a new device that runs on the Firefox OS. An event is set to take place on June 3rd, and a source tells Focus Taiwan the product will probably be a tablet. Firefox OS tablet, anybody? You might remember back in April, a Spanish company called Geeksphone started selling to Mozilla smartphones. They're currently geared towards developers. Mozilla also announced back in February at Mobile World Congress that it has 18 mobile network operators and four mobile phone makers backing its open source mobile OS.
According to a report prepared by the Defense Science Board, many of the designs for the U.S.'s most advanced weapon systems have been compromised by Chinese hackers. Weapons named in the report include the Black Hawk helicopter, the PAC-3 Patriot missile system, and the Navy's ballistic missile defenses system. The hackers were reportedly employed by the Chinese government, but officially China denies involvement.
The new version of Opera, built from the ground up on the Chromium engine, so I guess just above the ground up, is available for beta testing. Opera calls its beta browsers Opera Next. Improved features include a new speed dial for shortcuts with foldering, Discover for feeds, and Stash for saving and comparing websites. The address bar also now doubles as a search bar, just like all the other browsers now. Opera Next is available for Windows and Mac.
Google's building wireless networks in emerging markets like Africa and Asia. But what's even more cool is how it's deploying Wi-Fi to some of these areas, not by your conventional cables, but by balloon. Yeah, the Wall Street Journal is reporting that Google's looking into new and interesting methods for getting wireless access up and running in otherwise underserved areas. Methods like satellite internet and balloons. Now, the latter would use high-altitude platforms to blast a wireless signal across an area spanning hundreds of square miles.
That's so sci-fi. That's awesome. Foxconn VP told the Wall Street Journal the company needs to expand its client base to help increase manufacturing volume. And in pursuit of that goal, Foxconn has hired software engineers to create programs to run on the products Foxconn develops. The company is also looking to make an electronics accessories line.
Fusible.com reports Microsoft is trying to get its hands on Xbox One-related domain names. The company filed a complaint with the National Arbitration Forum to wrest away the rights to XboxOne.com and XboxOne.net, which are registered to Krasimir Ivanov, who registered the domains way back in December 2011. In the past, Microsoft has successfully picked up XboxPhone.com and XboxSmartGlass.com via a similar method.
This episode of Tech News Today brought to you by Ring Central. When we built the Twit Studios, we did not want to put in old-fashioned things. We wanted to do things in the cloud. So Russell, our IT guy, said, hey, get a cloud-based phone system. And we were like, hey, Russell, you're smart. We're going to do that. So we use Ring Central, and we love it. No startup cost, no PBX hardware to install or maintain. Ring Central allows you to easily customize all your call handling. We can get our voicemail in our email. We can get fax messages on our smartphones, so they're actually easy to respond to. And they have a new feature, Ring Central Conferencing. Get your own single conferencing bridge number, and then you can do unlimited conference calls for up to 1,000 participants. Believe me, that's probably enough. Lots of features. You can mute participants, get caller count, record conferences, and more. It's easy to use, and it works with your desk phone, your iPhone, your Android phone, or your Ring Central soft phone. It's free with your monthly service. So try it out. Ring Central offers all-inclusive pricing as low as $20 a month per user, and you can start right now with a 30-day risk-free trial. And they have that special offer for our listeners. When you buy one desk phone, get a second phone free up to 20 phones. So call this number designated for our listeners, 800-543-9980. That's 800-543-9980. Sing it with me. I'm not going to sing it. 800-543-9980. Or you can also go to ringcentral.com and use promo code TWIT. That's ringcentral.com. Promo code TWIT, and we thank them for their support of Tech News Today. Joining us now to discuss the stories of the day, Mr. Jonathan Strickland of HowStuffWorks.com and host of the Forward Thinking podcast. Welcome back to the show, John. Great to have you.
Thanks, Tom. It's great to be back. I'm very pleased to be here.
Good man. Good man. Well, let's start, Sarah, talking about that new Opera. I was tooling around with it today. I'm kind of an Opera fanboy of a sort. It's my default browser on Windows. What's in there this time?
Well, what's cool is I'm with you, Tom. I actually I've been playing around with Opera Next 15, which is basically the name of Opera's new beta channel. So if you go ahead and, in my case, download the browser, the beta browser for Mac, it's really quite nice. You've got basically your kind of, they call it speed dial, which is not new. People who have used the Opera browser are familiar with this, but there's a bit of a streamlined look and feel. You've kind of got your little windows, and you can categorize various websites. It's kind of like your personalized start page. You've also got Stash, which is basically a read later area, but it's not so much just pulling articles to read later. It's almost a little bit more of like an Evernote capability where you're almost cutting and pasting stuff to get to later in one page. So that's Stash. And then there's also a Discover tab, which Android Opera users might already be familiar with because it's in the Android version of the Opera browser, where you can basically say, I want to look at trending stories that are global, or I'm based in the U.S., so I'd like it to be a little bit more U.S. focus. And then you can manage your story categories if you're interested in, you know, things like technology, entertainment, sports, that sort of thing. And it runs on open source Chromium, uses the Blink rendering engine. And I have to say, it was extremely fast. I did a few tests. You know, I tried to save some videos and run some stuff. And concurrently with something like Chrome on my MacBook Air, which admittedly does not work very well these days, Opera was extremely speedy. I was really impressed by how quickly it flew. Opera Mail is all now going to, it's basically getting decoupled. So it's sort of in its separate app for people who are familiar, who are used to kind of doing it all in one place. Tom, I know that you like Opera. You've kind of thought it looked good this morning. Jonathan, have you had a chance to take this guy for a spin?
You know, I haven't installed this on my computer yet. The last time I used Opera, it was still using the Presto rendering engine. So it was quite a few versions ago. I think I fall into that category of people who, when you get that browser that seems to best fit the way that you are using the web, you stick with it, even though you might find out later there's something better because you're lazy. I mean this about me, by the way.
As the Opera team had said earlier this year that they were going to go ahead and go with WebKit in the future, presumably so that they can focus their resources on making the best browser. It has the smallest market share of the top five browsers. You got IE in first place, followed by Firefox, then Chrome, then Safari. Opera has a ways to go. Is Opera next the answer to getting some market share back from these other guys?
I think Opera thinks it is. I don't think it's going to really do a huge dent because the market is pretty much it's divvied up as much as it can be at this point. We saw some leveling off of web browser numbers a while ago where Chrome basically hit a saturation point. The people who want to use Chrome are using Chrome right now. Safari is just kind of this also-ran at this point. I think Opera, I mean, it's going to be good that you can actually see documents and things like Google Drive that actually will appear properly done, theoretically, with its new rendering engine on Opera. But I don't think it's going to make a huge dent, especially with Microsoft, you know, pumping up IE as much as they are and Google having all the power behind Chrome. I don't think Opera has enough marketing to get enough people on board with this, apart from that, you know, 1% who love Opera. And I've been using Opera for years. So I just don't think it's going to make a huge dent.
Tom, what do you think? I mean, IE has enjoyed a bit of a surge just because of so many mobile users. I mean, is Opera destined to stay in fifth place or does it have a chance?
Yeah, I am a fan and I really like this new Chromium-based version. I'm excited about that. I like to see the search going into the address bar, and I didn't like that when Chrome first did that. I thought it was a bad idea and I've changed my mind about that. I am missing some features from the old Opera, especially the tab previews. Those seem to have gone away. Maybe they'll bring some of those back. This is beta after all. But I also don't see anything here that's going to change the minds of Chrome users or people like John Strickland who are comfortable in the browser that they've got. What Opera's doing is chasing after a niche market, and they're doing all the right things to keep that market and keep relevant. But I don't know how you steal that market share at this point from other browsers.
Yeah, I think the best chance they have is just from capturing those people who like to try everything, the early adopters who are really curious about the different methods that companies make for web browsers. And then those might end up using Opera and finding it a better fit for themselves. But beyond that, to actually convince someone who has become used to using a particular browser, that's really tricky. And I'm not sure that they've got enough momentum to do that.
It's a challenge a lot of companies are running into. We've saturated our market. How do we expand our market share? And that's what that Foxconn report we heard about in the News Fuse was about. They're partnering up with Mozilla, we heard. They're looking into media content, software, accessories. They're quoted saying, we want to actively expand our client base to help increase our manufacturing volume. This goes along with a really interesting article that was on techthoughts.net from Samir Singh explaining the profit trap that Apple and Samsung are in. Now, remember, Foxconn is depending, not exclusively, but they're depending on Apple for a large portion of their market, and they see that market getting saturated. Why is that happening? Here's Samir Singh. I'm going to really summarize his article. You should definitely go read it to get the full impact. But he says what happens is markets mature, differentiation of the products evens out, and consumers start picking on price, not on features. As long as it has access to the market that they want, like an Android marketplace and phones, for instance, the replacement period lengthens because they're happy with the device they have. They don't have to keep switching it out to get new features. And that puts the squeeze on profit margins, which is exactly what we're seeing with Apple. We're seeing it a little with Samsung as well. The low-end developers then benefit. You see the ZTEs, you see the Lenovos come into a market and start eating out the market share because they're okay working on those smaller profit margins. That's what they do. So what does Samir Singh say? Well, here's your three. I have three ways to react to this because it happens over and over in all different products. You can diversify. That's what IBM did when the PC market started to get commodified. They started diversifying into lots of different areas. You can become a software services or component supplier. That's what Microsoft did. They said, we're going to be a software company. Texas Instruments stopped making products. They said, we're going to be a component supplier. Or you can disrupt the market. That's what Apple did in the early part of this, right? They came in and said, we got phones, we got tablets. John, what do you think? How can Apple and Samsung navigate these waters? Can Apple continue to innovate?
I think they're going to have to. Like you said, it's an excellent article. It really does lay out the basic problem. And that problem is that you can only astound people with something truly innovative and new for a certain amount of time before people begin to offer competing products that can seem at least as compelling, or if not as compelling, the price tag might make them as compelling as the thing that you have created. That lasts for a little while, but you have to be able to stay ahead of that if you want to keep being a profitable company, because eventually you're going to see that market share just sort of drift away as everything levels out. So I think that really what has to happen is that they need to take that third route. They need to be disruptive and find something else that everyone needs, even though they never knew they needed it. That's what, you know, Apple became famous for with the smartphones and with tablets.
And that's the hardest one of these three options to do. How does a company keep doing that? How do you keep disrupting the market over and over again to ensure your long-term success?
I don't know if that's even possible for one company to keep doing that. I think disruptions come from pretty much people out of nowhere sometimes. The phone market was disrupted by Apple, which was a computer maker. That seemed a little strange at the time. I'm thinking what's going to happen is that because these markets are getting so mature at this point, that the only way they're going to differentiate, yeah, it's going to be on that price, and that's what consumers are going to look at. But because these companies like Apple and Samsung, they're building brands that people are going to buy based on the name. So even if they see a price that's lower cost on an LG product or something like that, they're going to go, oh, that's kind of neat. Oh, but that's a Samsung. I'm going to pick that up instead. It should kind of reflect, it might mirror the whole market share for cars. Mercedes, they have a huge history. They pride themselves on craftsmanship. You got Bentleys, you got these fantastic cars that just cost a ton of money. So they're making profit, but they don't need to be in everybody's garage to be the top dog. As long as they're a profitable company, they might not care as much about market share.
Sarah, what do you make of this theory? I mean, it seems to make sense to me. It makes perfect sense. And he's got a lot of citations here. Are these the only way forward?
Yeah, I mean, if you think, you know, to Ayaz's point, if you kind of compare it to, you know, an expensive car that's really, really special, but just not for everybody, you know, because it's cost prohibitive and maybe most people just need to get from point A to point B. I think that Apple, well, and Samsung to a certain extent, but it started with Apple, has really like ridden the line of that for a long time, because Apple does not want its software to be exclusive at all. In fact, it's supposed to be so easy that everybody can use it, and it's great for schools and kids and that sort of thing. But at the same time, you've kind of got this, well, it's a very special phone, and the hardware, so much goes into it. Well, yeah, and you might argue, well, Samsung, the closest competitor that Samsung makes is not necessarily so beholden to that beautiful hardware design. But in general, yeah, it's pretty much the same idea. And when you get into smartphone offerings that seem pretty much the same as these guys, but are just cheaper, then yeah, what do you do at that point? I mean, I think that you have to kind of go a little bit crazy with innovation, but then that is difficult, because then you kind of get into this marketing push of, well, now we have to convince the public that the stuff that they're using and have been using for years. I mean, the iPhone came out, what, in 2007? You know, for 6 years now, we've got to rapidly change it just so we differentiate ourselves again. You have to be really careful with that, or you just look silly.
You pivot. That's what I've been told. That's the buzzword. I don't know what it means.
It's a huge challenge, because these companies, of course, have to answer to shareholders. And so to maintain a level of profitability that's created a certain amount of expectation among your shareholders, if you are able to frame it in such a way where you can convince shareholders, this is a good thing for us to shift into this new form of business where we're not looking at maintaining a certain percentage of profit growth year over year. We're looking at trying to make sure that we have our space in the market and that remains our space. that's a tough sell. I mean, shareholders, what they love to hear is that your profitability growth rate in turn is growing year over year over year. So not only are you becoming more profitable, you're becoming more profitable faster. And I think that's just a basic expectation that you see in the market that affects everybody, not just Apple.
Yeah, it's hard. You need a strong CEO to sell that. That's what Apple had with Steve Jobs. Let's talk a little bit about Gmail. Looks like some screenshots of a new version have leaked out. This is a pretty major change, not just a couple tweaks here and there.
Yeah, the Next Web has some screenshots of what looks to be new tabs on the top of Gmail. Now, in the screenshot, they show four tabs, primary, social, promotions, and updates, and they appear to be basically labels, pre-made labels for you when you get your inbox, when you get your email in. But a source at the Next Web says that the categories are going to be main, social, offers, notifications, and forums. Now, main is for family and friends, social for Google+, Zynga, YouTube, that kind of stuff. Important emails about bills that need to be paid, dining reservations, flight alerts, that'll be under notifications. And the Next Web says the categories are also going to be available in the Gmail mobile app as well. And the categories, if they are real, will be rolled out in the next couple of weeks. The Next Web contacted Google. Google did not comment. Jonathan, a pre-labeled inbox, is this amazing innovation in the email space?
Well, it might not be for me and you. I mean, we're probably used to doing things like setting up filters and setting up various inboxes so that we're not hit by a fire hose of content every time we log into our Gmail. But when I think about some of my friends who use email regularly, but they don't take the time to learn how to set up things like filters and different inboxes, this could actually be really useful. It could be something that lets them very quickly navigate their messages. And so I think this redesign is for people who are less likely to take that time and effort to learn a system really well to take full advantage of it. And I'm perfectly fine with that. I know that if it affects me, it'll probably be a little bit irritating. I might think that, oh, well, this is not the way I would set it up. It's how Google thinks I would set it up. But at the same time, I understand that this is casting a net to a much larger audience than just me.
Tom, Google dabbled with changing email when it came to their priority inbox, this idea that you would get these emails from the most important people. And I've turned that feature off myself because I don't really care for that. Do you see yourself using pre-made tabs made by Google?
Yeah, I dismissed this out of hand when I first saw the headline. But the more I read about it, it sounds like it might be a better idea than priority inbox. Because what it's saying is we'll be able to tell when you're just getting bacon, those social offers, those not spam emails, but those emails you signed up for notifications from things like Goodreads and Twitter and Facebook, and put those all in one area. We'll be able to like tell what your bills are and put those all in one area. If it works and I have to do minimal input to make it work, I actually think I like this a lot. It's all in the execution of it.
Sarah, somebody in the chat room called this the Google Plusification of Gmail. I'm looking at Google Plus. You've got your different circles. Is this kind of idea of making these pre-made tabs a kind of a more social thing? Is this more like Google Plus? What do you make of it?
I don't know. I think email is really personal, right? My email inbox is all mine. It's stuff that's coming directly to me and who I communicate with is a case-by-case basis in email. So no, I don't really think it's... I don't feel like this is Gmail becoming more like Google Plus. This is Gmail becoming, this is Google saying, we want you to use Gmail because you're going to see little ads up there, that, you know, at the top of your Gmail page because you have a lot of other options now. I mean, on my phone specifically, I have all sorts of other email services I can use to hook up through my Gmail, but give me extra bells and whistles that Gmail in its simplified form over the years just hasn't really offered me. So if Gmail can do things like, yeah, I'll put all your reservations in one area. So it'll be like your TripIt, right? And I can group your e-bills in one place. So you don't have to create a label for yourself. Yeah. And you don't really have to worry about priority inbox because that was a little bit too general. It seems like it's just making better use of categorizing emails that we're all getting and making it's more of just a smart inbox.
Yeah, that and setting up filters and rules is not exactly a fun experience. I'm looking at my email box right now, and I do have my own notifications section. I've got a deals label. I already have done some of the same things that Google will be doing in the future. I think this kind of thing, it does differentiate yourself when you have so many. There's lots of variety for email. There's Outlook.com. There's Yahoo Mail, and there's Gmail. And if Gmail is actually organizing the stuff for you from the beginning, that makes it a little easier to navigate. I'm also thinking on a mobile space, it makes it a little easier to find things because things are already pre-sorted for you. So when you're looking for your flight information or whatever that your e-bill is, you'll know where to go without you having to remember, did I label that properly or did the rule follow through or did a filter fail?
Outlook.com already does some of this stuff with bills and newsletters and that sort of thing. So it is a little bit of Gmail catching up to Microsoft because since they launched Outlook, they've had some of the shiniest, newest attempts at features. I haven't used those features in Outlook.com, so I don't know how well they work, but it will be interesting to keep tabs on. Speaking of tabs, let's talk about tablet shipments. As we all expect, tablets will surpass PCs in sales. When's that going to happen, Sarah?
This year, Tom. Yeah, at least when according to laptops, IDC put out a new report. It is not different as far as the trends go. We've covered this in the past, but they're getting a little bit more specific, saying that the tablet market is going to outship the laptop market this year. When you're talking about the entire PC market, so that's laptops and desktops and like, that's 2015, so 2 years from now. They point to tablet shipments estimated to grow 59% this year alone to 229.3 million units. Obviously, that's partly due to increased reliance on mobile. The PC market has been steadily dropping. The average selling price for tablets is dropping. In fact, the global average selling price for tablets is supposed to drop about 11% to the average of $391, which is about half that of the average PC. And also what was interesting is IDC said within two quarters, that sub 8-inch tablet category, so tablets that are, you know, they're the smaller form factor, overtook the larger size segment in terms of total shipments. In 2011, only 27% were that size. By 2013, 55% of tablet shipments should be, this is projected, and then by 2017, 57% expected to be that sub 8-inch category. John, what do you think about the future of tablets? I mean, everyone's predicting that tablets eventually will take over as the new PC, but is that sub 8-inch category the future of tablets, or are we always going to have choices?
I think we're going to always have choices. I do think that is going to become a greater focus for a lot of manufacturers out there. It's a very convenient size if you want to just carry your mobile computing device around with you. So I think that that's a big advantage there. I mean, it's if you've ever seen people walking around taking photos with an iPad, like a full-sized iPad, that always seems a little awkward to me, but it seems slightly less awkward with the smaller ones. So I can see that those are becoming more and more accepted. You know, I remember when they first started coming out, a lot of my friends who already had the larger tablets dismissed them out of hand, thinking they wanted that screen real estate. But then once they saw the convenience factor, the fact that it's a lot easier to throw something like that in a bag or even a large pocket of a coat or something, then they started to come around to the smaller form factor. As for them getting more popular than PCs, I mean, we've heard this story for a while, and of course we know lots of different answers. They're less expensive. It's not as difficult to upgrade them. You end up buying a computer, and you just let that computer be your home base station for longer than you normally would be. Instead of upgrading it every couple of years, you might go 6-7 years because all the stuff that you're doing on a day-to-day basis is still on that tablet. So unless there's something specific, like if you're a gamer, then obviously you're going to be upgrading more frequently. But if you're just using your main desktop or laptop computer to occasionally type up something in word processing, there's not a big incentive for you to upgrade. So I think this completely makes sense to me.
Ayaz, what do you think? By 2015, is the sub 8-inch tablet market just the dominant computer that we're all carrying around with us?
I think there's a chance of that because the phones are getting larger, tablets are getting smaller. There's that line of what's a phone and what's a tablet at that point. And the thing about that is that this is the device that everyone carries at this point. It's either it's going to be a tablet or it's going to be a phone. So I think that's definitely going to surpass PCs. When it comes to that's why Microsoft's investing so heavily in Windows Phone and Windows 8. So if that can be on smaller devices, they want a piece of that because as far as they're concerned, they don't want PCs to die. They're saying flat out, look, that is a PC. That tablet is a PC. So the question is, when will the definition change? When will a tablet become a full-fledged PC and people stop saying that? Say, oh, PCs are fine, because now they just don't have a hinge.
All right, let's move along to BuzzFeed and CNN partnering up on a YouTube channel that this might have seemed very odd on the face of it. The business reasons make sense. BuzzFeed wants to get some more news content. They want to get more into news. They want to get more video. CNN knows how to do that. CNN wants the younger audience, the 18 to 34s. BuzzFeed has that audience. But you may say, why would I watch this channel? Don't forget, BuzzFeed's not just about cute kittens, although that is very important to them. They also want to bring you in with those cute kittens to read their larger feature stories. And CNN's been making a move that way, too. They've been going to more feature-oriented content, especially on the weekends and in the off hours. So it kind of reminds me of CNN-FN when they partnered with Money Magazine. They actually launched it before Money Magazine, but they made the CNN financial channel CNN Money, or maybe MSNBC, Microsoft and NBC partnering. John, do you think this is sort of the modern equivalent of two different media getting together to try to like have a multiplicative effect?
I think it's certainly, you could call it an attempt. It'll really be interesting to see how this works out, because I watched the first video that is available, which, spoiler alert, the first video is a compilation of rescues, people being rescued by various efforts through CNN footage. So they took all this CNN back footage of old news stories. I mean, some of these date back more than 10 years, where you get to see the various rescue efforts, which is a moving experience. I don't mean to downplay that, but it does seem kind of interesting to take news footage and actively try to turn that into a viral video or meme sort of situation. And I assume that we're going to see a greater variety of content through this partnership. It's not just going to be taking old CNN footage and making it somehow meaningful through a thematic approach. I certainly hope that's not the only thing we see, because I don't see that working in the long term. It might be something that people share occasionally when they say, oh, this is this really uplifting video. Look at how amazing this is, or how cute this is, if we go with all the cat stuff, because it always comes back round to that. But I would hope it goes far beyond that, because I don't see how that's going to pull people in to look at this longer content.
Yeah, the rescue thing makes sense as supplemental. It's kind of weird when it's the only thing up there, right? But I know what BuzzFeed's trying to do is say, let's make news and let's get people who actually know how to do it. And we know what makes people click on the internet. That rescue video is the kind of thing that makes people click. So I'm really interested to see what those three videos a week we're going to get from BuzzFeed are going to be like, especially when you've got that CNN brand up there. If you had to make a guess, what are we going to expect from BuzzFeed?
I think BuzzFeed's going to get a little bit more serious, and CNN is going to keep getting more ridiculous. I think that's what's going to happen there. So we'll go somewhere keep in the kidding. Middle. So I'm thinking, you know, BuzzFeed, like you guys are saying, BuzzFeed, they know how to get eyeballs. And so if CNN can get its content to people and if their news is accurate at the same time, that would be really helpful. So the thing is, if they're going to get all this attention on YouTube, there needs to be some I'm just going to say accuracy, because BuzzFeed is basically, every time I think of BuzzFeed, I'm thinking like a list of the top 8 kittens or the top 25
right.
Toy weapons you wanted as a child or something silly. And CNN, is supposed to be news. So when you marry silly and news, I'm just kind of curious what kind of output you're going to get. I'm hoping it's serious news and it's not like an Onion parody kind of thing.
That perception is something to battle, though, right, John?
Oh, yeah, yeah. That's definitely something to battle. In fact, and what I also wonder is that, let's assume that they do create a very serious investigative news channel somehow. Those three videos that they produce are actually covering the news in a very serious way. I would be very curious to see the metrics of the people who are clicking on the cute viral stuff that they've meshed together from all the back footage from CNN versus the actual news videos, because I'm wondering if they can actually get that conversion. Conversion's a really tricky thing. And just because you can get people's attention with one type of video doesn't necessarily mean that you're going to be able to get them for whatever is supposed to be the main course.
And YouTube wants a news channel. That's one of the things they don't really have a prominent contributor. There are plenty of news channels on there, well, we're on there, for instance, but they're looking for that face of news for them. Sarah, do you think this could be it?
That's a good question. I think BuzzFeed has taken strides to be not just the top 10 ha-ha funny story. I mean, I'm on BuzzFeed all the time. I share those links with you guys all the time, actually, when I say this is really funny. But BuzzFeed, especially, I can think of during the election year in the U.S. last year, they hired sort of political team. So BuzzFeed certainly wants to be more things to more people. Funny memes, yes, but serious news as well. Partnering with CNN is good for BuzzFeed. I know, Aya, as you mentioned, that CNN is getting more ridiculous, but I think in general, the public thinks of CNN as, you know, it's a news source. It's a brand to trust. So I think the two of them together can mutually benefit from being attached to the other brand. But yeah, when you throw YouTube into the mix, Tom, you make a good point that there are many places to get legitimate news. Hopefully, you know, Tech News Today is, you would lump us in with other good sources on YouTube, but it'll be interesting to see what are we exactly seeing. Three videos a week, you got to pack quite a bit into that if you're actually going to be wanting to be covering general news. So yeah, it'll be interesting to see how serious it gets.
From two big content partners on a YouTube channel to YouTube partnering with Microsoft, has their spat ended, Ayaz? Are these two getting along now?
Sort of. So let's go through some backstory here. Now, Google refused to make a YouTube app for Windows Phone. So Microsoft said, fine, we'll just make our own application. But Microsoft's YouTube app did a little bit more than a YouTube app normally does. It allows you to download videos, and it had no in-app advertising, to which Google issued a cease and desist letter causing Microsoft to remove its own application. So now there's an agreement. There's a statement from, I believe it's YouTube. It says, Microsoft and YouTube are working together to update the new YouTube for Windows Phone app to enable compliance with YouTube's API terms of service, including enabling ads in the coming weeks. Now, The Verge reports that Microsoft will have to use publicly available YouTube APIs, which means its app won't be as powerful as the last one, and it might be as lame as basically an iframe with YouTube inside. Jonathan, did Microsoft have to make its own app just to get Google's attention? Because Google does not support Windows Phone whatsoever, and this finally is going to yield some kind of application.
I think that that was definitely the plan from Microsoft's perspective, because I can't imagine that they would have thought that the downloading videos and no advertising within the app would fly for very long. So if that was in fact their plan, it worked. So
Tom, what about this whole apps versus web thing at this point? YouTube is HTML5 on mobile platforms. You can see it on pretty much any device. Why exactly did Microsoft need to bother to have an application for this? Does anybody really need an application for YouTube at this point?
Yeah, they do. I mean, that's why YouTube has an application for iOS, because the HTML5 streaming is great. It's just not there yet. And I think that is the future. I think you're right to point in that direction and say, look, you're going to be able to just get YouTube the way YouTube is, no matter where you go. But right now, people want apps. People are used to apps, and apps tend to be a little better on the platform they're designed for. So I totally see why Microsoft was doing this. I think they wanted to tweak Google's nose a little bit by doing it in a way that they knew they would get upset at, like allowing downloadable videos without advertisements. Microsoft's not dumb. They want these sort of things for their own products. So this is, if nothing else, a demonstration of why openness always gets you a better product, because Microsoft, for good or ill, was trying to pursue the open way of doing things, which is you just do them the way you want to, that are best for the user, and pointing out that YouTube is not as open as maybe Google would like you to think they are sometimes.
Sarah, do you expect more stunts from Microsoft? Are they just going to make applications for popular sites and applications they don't have already?
I mean, I guess as a user, if I was using the former YouTube app where I could download videos and I didn't have to look at ads, I'd be a little miffed that I guess Microsoft and Google are now getting together to make it more beneficial for the companies rather than me. But yeah, I think it's important to have something like an app in the Microsoft ecosystem. I mean, you're right that the mobile web is pretty much good enough, and in many ways, you don't really need an app experience. But the perception that if it's missing, somehow it's because Microsoft isn't good enough for Google, or Google wants to put its resources into other OSs, that does sometimes come through, even if it's not really warranted. So sure, it was sort of a, hey, Google, look at us. If you don't want to work with us, we're going to make something that's going to bug you. It does seem like it worked. And hopefully if the companies are working together, then at least we have something that's stable and going to be around for a while.
Something that actually stays in the app market. That's the thing. Microsoft was very public about this whole spat, saying, hey, look, if you guys gave us the APIs, we'd put ads on this, we'd do whatever you want, because if we just want a YouTube app on our platform. I think it's just odd that Microsoft would do this in the first place, but it's getting them what they want at the end, right? They're going to have a YouTube app, and when you run that Windows Phone application that says, hey, does it run on Android? And yeah, here's your equivalent for Windows Phone. They'll actually be able to have another check mark. But I'm really curious about whether the app is going to be that good anyway, because if it's a crippled version, how good could it be?
You know they had to do it. I mean, YouTube is so popular. I mean, the fact that it's what a lot of people think of as the source for user-generated video. I mean, there aren't that many other competitors that that the average person's even aware of. I know, you know, your audience definitely knows of plenty of them, but the average person just thinks it's just YouTube. So when you've got that big name there, you really want to have something that can show that it leverages the fact that there's this connection between this enormous service and the hardware that you provide. That's a compelling selling point for a company. So I completely understand why they want to have the app and not just have it be a mobile browsing experience. Making it easier and easier for someone to access means that they're more likely to consider that an actual feature of the phone.
I'm just excited for future Microsoft stunts. I'm expecting people coming out of airplanes, Zeppelins, kind of Google-like. It's going to be fun.
I'm going to start. I was going to make an untoward Hindenburg joke, and it's too soon. Let's move on to randomizer. Hey, John, you got 516,000 euros I can borrow?
That you can borrow?
Yeah, because I really want to buy this Apple One that an Asian client got at auction from German auction house Brecker on Saturday.
Oh, you think he's going to sell it at cost for the same thing that he paid for it?
You don't think he will?
No, I don't think so.
This is sort of like a running feature on kickers and randomizers across shows that I've done over the years, is when an Apple One sells, what did it sell for? They keep getting more expensive. This one, 516,000 euros. That's about $668,000 US, up from the last one that sold last year for 492,000 euros. And thankfully, on this Boing Boing article that Jenny posted over there, there's a picture from Brecker Auction House of the one that sold, because you always see the wooden case Apple One, and there is one Apple One out there in a wooden case, but the guy who first bought that Apple One built the wooden case for it. The Apple One was just a circuit board. So the Brecker House one, if you scroll down, Jason, you'll actually see the Brecker official photo of it sitting there. That circuit board in the middle is the Apple One, and it's hooked up to an accessory keyboard, tape drive, and monitor there. I'm always fascinated with these still kicking, still working. I think there's only six that are available that actually still work.
It's a heck of a markup. 1976, these things sold, and it was famous for the price point, $666. So out of curiosity, just while we were doing the show, I checked on an inflation calculator because, you know, if you adjust for inflation, that takes some of the sting out, right?
Sure, right.
Yeah. So in today's dollars, that's about $2,650. So it's still quite a markup. I mean, I knew that Apple was really after the profit, but this is ridiculous.
Yeah, come on. No, stop writing your emails, folks. He's kidding. We know Apple doesn't get the profits from this. But if it weren't for right of first sale, Apple could stop this. Just saying.
That's true.
Let's move on to the calendar.
The D11 conference, All Things D's annual conference, is happening in Rancho Palos Verdes today through Thursday, May 30th, Palos Verdes, California. Mojang's Scrolls is releasing an open beta on June 3rd. That's next Monday. And Google is not going to pay Android developers in Argentina anymore. In fact, they're pulling the apps on July 27th.
Argentinians will still get free apps, but yeah, there's some weird tax rules or something. I don't know. That's crazy. Let's see what's incoming.
Incoming message.
Got a voicemail from Scott on Lenovo's success. He wants us to thank Microsoft. Why is that, Scott?
Hey, TNT crew. This is Scott in Victorville, California. I just thought it was worth pointing out that I think part of Lenovo's success has to do with their relationship with big businesses who still have to upgrade because of what Microsoft pointed out, iPads won't run Office. My company just rolled out 3,500 iPads to my sales force, and the only reason we're still getting our laptops upgraded is because we can't run Excel or PowerPoint. So anyway, great show. Thanks a lot. Have a good day.
That's a good point. Although it doesn't explain why people are choosing Lenovo when they're not choosing the, you know, HPs and Dells of the world whose market share is declining. Why does Lenovo have the success? But that would explain why there has to be computers at all. Good one.
We got an email from Joseph. It says, hey, love the show. On Friday, you guys were talking about the concept of using the Kinect to purchase movie tickets and how generally it didn't seem like a good idea and how it would be to game the system so people wouldn't have to pay $20 to watch a movie. I'm wondering if anyone considered that using that technology, we could have in-theater movies in our own home using the Kinect to validate, as well as possibly validate how many people are there paying for the movie. Like anything, people will game the system in order to get more people into the room, but people with real movie theaters do the same thing. When you guys mentioned that story, my first thought was, I'll finally be able to get to a movie theater and see them when they are released. I have four kids, so I don't get to the theater very often. Interesting idea.
Oh, Joseph, I'm sorry to burst your bubble because I know you're really excited about this, but the reason we don't get day and date movie releases in our home is not because there isn't a Kinect-like system to help charge for them. It's because the theater owners will not distribute the movies if the movie makers distribute them directly. In fact, there's big battles over this when they occasionally try to put them out even earlier than 90 days after the theater release. So sadly, that is not an upside. I still don't see the upside to being charged extra to have extra people in my home. I think it's horrible.
Well, yeah, it's the worst idea in the world.
I'm going to develop IR absorbing clothing. So that way the Kinect doesn't even notice you're there. Now, granted, it's going to have to be one of those Zentai suits where head to toe for it to work, but I think there's a real market there.
Got another email from Russell in Orlando, Florida, who says, regarding Google looking to buy Waze, when you look to buy a company, you also get to have a good look at the books and the assets and patents and future plans. Even if Google doesn't buy Waze, they'll have a good idea of what this competitor has purchased. With this information, they can then determine whether there's also a need to be defensive. Patents that Waze may have is probably the biggest item that Google could be concerned about, since, like you noted, they already have most of the technology to do what Waze does.
I was watching that episode. By the way, you guys were awesome on Friday. I just barely got in the hotel room in time to catch the episode. And I think they would buy Waze because it can do things that Google Maps either doesn't do well yet, like traffic rerouting. Google Maps doesn't reroute on the fly. If you took that Waze traffic rerouting and just folded it into Google Maps, that would be fantastic. Because I usually pick which app I use based on whether I'm worried about traffic or not.
Well, exactly. I mean, the whole thing with Google is like, sure, they can replicate that, but it just may make more sense to buy something like Waze that's not only working well, but just so popular.
Yeah. But Russell, good point. It can be overblown how much benefit companies get when they poke inside the books during an acquisition, but definitely it's been known to happen where companies will look at something just to see what kind of information they can glean. There are also legal requirements of what they can and can't do with that information and all that sort of thing. But wouldn't say it's totally outside the realm of possibility that that's part of why they're doing it too. Well, that is it for Tech News Today. John Strickland, my friend, thank you so much for joining us. Always good to have you. Let folks know about your new project and what's happening with it. It's really intriguing. It sounds like a great series.
Yeah, we just launched it this year. It's called Forward Thinking, and it's at fwthinking.com. It's all about the future and innovation and how we're going to arrive at that ideal future. It's really a series that's all about optimism and really looking at how people have come together to combine some amazing amounts of knowledge to create some phenomenal possibilities that are maybe just right around the corner. So we've been shooting this series at the beginning of the year, releasing on a weekly basis, and I'm really, really proud of it. I would hope everyone would go and check it out. I think the production values are great. We've got some great writers working on it. The host is all right.
He's only somewhat fantastic.
I think he's eloquent and a great guest on other shows.
Thank you. So very kind.
Check it out. FWThinking.com. It's forward thinking from John Strickland of HowStuffWorks.com. Thank you, John. And thank you, folks, for contributing in our subreddit, TechNewsToday.reddit.com. It helps us figure out what stories we would like to put in our lineup each and every day. We want to hear from you either by submission or vote, or best of all worlds, both. Do it at TechNewsToday.reddit.com. You can also find us on the web at twit.tv/TNT and get links to our wiki and our show notes and all that sort of thing. You can email us, TNT@twit.tv, or give us a call. Leave us voicemail, 260-TNT-SHOW. We'll be back tomorrow when Jim Louderback joins us as our guest. See you then.
Thank you for staring into our souls.